And now, Chapter 14, Prayers Offered by Lord Brahma to Lord Krishna. Brahma said, "My dear Lord, you are the only worshipful Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead. Therefore, I am offering my humble obeisances and prayers just to please you. Your bodily features are of the color of clouds filled with water. You are glittering with a silver electric aura emanating from your yellow garments. Let me offer my respectful repeated obeisances unto the son of Maharaj Nanda, who is standing before me with conch shell, earrings, and peacock feather on his head. His face is beautiful. He is wearing a helmet garlanded by forest flowers, and he stands with a morsel of food in his hand. He is decorated with a cane, a buffalo horn bugle, and a flute. He stands before me with small lotus feet. My dear Lord, people may say that I am the master of all Vedic knowledge, and I am supposed to be the creator of this universe. But it has been proved now that I cannot understand your personality, even though you are present before me, just like a child. You are playing with your boyfriend's calves and cows, which might imply that you do not even have sufficient education. You are appearing just like a village boy, carrying your food in your hand and searching for your calves. And yet, there is so much difference between your body and mine that I cannot estimate the potency of your body. As I have already stated in the Brahma Samhita, your body is not material. In the Brahma Samhita it is stated that the body of the Lord is all spiritual. There is no difference between the Lord's body and His self. Each limb of His body can perform the actions of all the others. The Lord can see with His hands. He can hear with His eyes. He can accept offerings with His legs. And He can create with His mouth. Brahma continued, "Your appearance as a cowherd child is for the benefit of the devotees, and although I have committed offenses at your lotus feet by stealing away your cows, boys, and calves, I can understand that you have mercy upon me. That is your transcendental quality. You are very affectionate toward your devotees. In spite of your affection for me, I cannot estimate the potency of your bodily activities. It is to be understood that when I, Lord Brahma, the Supreme Personality of this universe, cannot estimate the childlike body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then what to speak of others? And if I cannot estimate the spiritual potency of your childlike body, then what can I understand about your transcendental pastimes? Therefore, as it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, anyone who can understand a little of the transcendental pastimes, appearance, and disappearance of the Lord, becomes immediately eligible to enter into the kingdom of God after quitting the material body." This statement is also confirmed in the Vedas, and it is stated, "Simply by understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can overcome the chain of repeated birth and death. I therefore recommend that people should not try to understand you by their speculative knowledge. The best process of understanding you is to submissively give up the speculative process and try to hear about you either from yourself, as you have given statements in the Bhagavad Gita and many similar Vedic literatures, or from a realized devotee who has taken shelter at your lotus feet. One has to hear from a devotee without speculation. One does not even need to change his worldly position. He simply has to hear your message. Although you are not understandable by the material senses, simply by hearing about you, one can gradually conquer the nescience of misunderstanding. By your own grace only, you become revealed to a devotee. You are unconquerable by any other means. Speculative knowledge, without any trace of devotional service, is simply a useless waste of time in the search for you. Devotional service is so important that even a little attempt can raise one to the highest perfectional platform. One should not therefore neglect this auspicious process of devotional service and take to the speculative method. By the speculative method, one may gain partial knowledge of your cosmic manifestation. But it is not possible to understand you, the origin of everything. The attempt of persons who are interested only in speculative knowledge is simply wasted labor, like the labor of a person who attempts to gain something by beating the empty husk of a rice paddy. A little quantity of paddy can be husked by the grinding wheel, and one can gain some grains of rice. But if the skin of the paddy is already beaten by the grinding wheel, there is no further gain in beating the husk. It is simply useless labor. My dear Lord, there are many instances in the history of human society where a person, after failing to achieve the transcendental platform, engaged himself in devotional service with his body, mind, and words, and thus attained the highest perfectional state of entering into your abode. The processes of understanding you by speculation or mystic meditation are all useless without devotional service. One should therefore engage himself in your devotional service, even in his worldly activities, and one should always keep himself near you by the process of hearing and chanting your transcendental glories. Simply by being attached to hearing and chanting your glories, one can attain the highest perfectional stage and enter into your kingdom. If a person, therefore, always keeps in touch with you by hearing and chanting your glories and offers the results of his work for your satisfaction only, he very easily and happily attains entrance into your supreme abode. You are realizable by persons who have cleansed their hearts of all contamination. This cleansing of the heart is made possible by chanting and hearing the glories of your Lordship. The Lord is all-pervading. As it is stated by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, everything is sustained by me, but at the same time, I am not in everything. Since the Lord is all-pervading, there is nothing existing without his knowledge. The all-pervasive nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can never be within the limited knowledge of a living entity. Therefore, a person who has attained steadiness of the mind by fixing the mind on the lotus feet of the Lord is able to understand the Supreme Lord to some extent. It is the business of the mind to wander over varied subject matter for sense gratification. Therefore, only a person who engages the senses always in the service of the Lord can control the mind and be fixed at the lotus feet of the Lord. This concentration of the mind upon the lotus feet of the Lord is called samadhi. Until one reaches the stage of samadhi, or trance, he cannot understand the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There may be some philosophers or scientists who can study the cosmic nature from atom to atom. They may be so advanced that they can count the atomic composition of the cosmic atmosphere, or all the planets and stars in the sky, or even the shining molecular parts of the sun, or other stars and luminaries in the sky. but it is not possible to count the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As described in the beginning of Vedanta Sutra, the Supreme Person is the origin of all qualities. He is generally called Nirguna. Nirguna means without estimation in qualities. Guna means quality, and Nir means without estimation. But impersonalists interpret this word Nirguna as having no quality. Because they are unable to estimate the qualities of the Lord in transcendental realization, they conclude that the Supreme Lord has no qualities. But that is actually not the position. The real position is that He is the original source of all qualities. All qualities are emanating constantly from Him. How, therefore, can a limited person count the qualities of the Lord? One may estimate the qualities of the Lord for one moment, but the next moment, the qualities are increased. So it is not possible to make an estimation of the transcendental qualities of the Lord. He is therefore called Nirguna. His qualities cannot be estimated. One should not uselessly labor in mental speculation to estimate the Lord's qualities. There is no need of adopting the speculative method or exercising the body to attain mystic yoga perfection. One should simply understand that the distress and happiness of this body are predestined. There is no need to try to avoid the distress of this bodily existence or to attempt to achieve happiness by different types of exercises. The best course is to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead with body, mind, and words, and always be engaged in His service. This transcendental labor is fruitful, but other attempts to understand the absolute truth are never successful. Therefore, an intelligent man does not try to understand the Supreme Person, the absolute truth, by speculative or mystic power. Rather, he engages in devotional service and depends on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knows that whatever may happen to the body is due to his past fruitive activities. If one lives such a simple life in devotional service, then automatically he can inherit the transcendental abode of the Lord. Actually, every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord and a son of the Godhead. Each has the natural right to inherit and share the transcendental pleasures of the Lord. But due to the contact of matter, conditioned living entities have been practically disinherited. If one adopts the simple method of engaging himself in devotional service, automatically he becomes eligible to become freed from the material contamination and elevated to the transcendental position of associating with the Supreme Lord. Lord Brahma presented himself to Lord Krishna as the most presumptuous living creature because he wanted to examine the wonder of his personal power. He stole the boys and calves of the Lord in order to see how the Lord would recover them. After his maneuver, Lord Brahma admitted that his attempt was most presumptuous, for he was attempting to test his energy before the person of original energy. Coming to his senses, Lord Brahma saw that although he was a very powerful living creature in the estimation of all other living creatures within this material world, in comparison to the power and energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his power was nothing. The scientists of the material world have discovered wonders such as atomic weapons, and when tested in a city or insignificant place on this planet, such powerful weapons create so-called havoc. But if the atomic weapons are tested on the sun, what is their significance? They are insignificant there, similarly. Brahmas stealing the calves and boys from Sri Krishna may be a wonderful display of mystic power, but when Sri Krishna exhibited his expansive power in so many calves and boys and maintained them without effort, Brahma could understand that his own power was insignificant. Brahma addressed Lord Krishna as Achyuta, because the Lord is never forgetful of a little service rendered by his devotee. He is so kind and affectionate towards his devotees that a little service by them is accepted by him as a great deal. Brahma has certainly rendered much service to the Lord. As the Supreme Personality in charge of this particular universe, he is, without a doubt, a faithful servant of Krishna. Therefore, he could appease Krishna. He asked that the Lord understand him as a subordinate servant, whose little mistake and impudence might be excused. He admitted that he was puffed up by his powerful position as Lord Brahma. Because he is the qualitative incarnation of the mode of passion within this material world, this was natural for him, and therefore he committed the mistake. But after all, Lord Krishna would kindly take compassion upon his subordinate and excuse him for his gross mistake. Lord Brahma realized his actual position. He is certainly the supreme teacher of this universe, in charge of the production of material nature, consisting of complete material elements, false ego, sky, air, fire, water, and earth. Such a universe may be gigantic, but it can be measured, just as we measure our body as 7 cubits. Generally, everyone's personal bodily measurement is calculated to be 7 cubits of his hand. This particular universe may appear as a very gigantic body, but it is nothing but the measurement of 7 cubits for Lord Brahma. Aside from this universe, there are unlimited other universes which are outside the jurisdiction of this particular Lord Brahma. Just as innumerable atomic infinitesimal fragments pass through the holes of a screened window, so millions and trillions of universes in their seedling form are coming out from the bodily pores of Mahavishnu. And that Mahavishnu is but a part of the plenary expansion of Krishna. Under these circumstances, although Lord Brahma is the supreme creature within this universe, what is his importance in the presence of Lord Krishna? Lord Brahma therefore compared himself to a little child within the womb of his mother. If the child within the womb plays with his hands and legs, and while playing touches the body of the mother, is the mother offended with the child? Of course she isn't. Similarly, Lord Brahma may be a very great personality, and yet not only Brahma, but everything that be is existing within the womb of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord's energy is all-pervading. There is no place in the creation where it is not acting. Everything is existing within the energy of the Lord. So the Brahma of this universe and the Brahmas of the many other millions and trillions of universes are existing within the energy of the Lord. Therefore, the Lord is considered to be the mother, and everything existing within the womb of the mother is considered to be the child. And the good mother is never offended with the child, even if he touches the body of the mother by kicking his legs. Lord Brahma then admitted that his birth was from the lotus flower, which blossomed from the navel of Narayan, after the dissolution of the three worlds, or three planetary systems, known as Bhurloka, Bhuvarloka, and Svarloka. The universe is divided into three divisions, namely Svarga, Martya, and Patala. These three planetary systems are merged into water at the time of dissolution. At that time, Narayan, the plenary portion of Krishna, lies down on the water, and gradually a lotus stem grows from his navel, and from that lotus flower, Brahma is born. It is naturally concluded that the mother of Brahma is Narayan. Because the Lord is the resting place of all the living entities after the dissolution of the universe, he is called Narayan. The word Nara means the aggregate total of all living entities, and Ayan means the resting place. The form of Garbhadakshayi Vishnu is called Narayan because he rests himself on that water. In addition, he is the resting place of all living creatures. Besides that, Narayan is also present in everyone's heart, as it is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. In that sense also, he is Narayan, as Ayan means the source of knowledge as well as the resting place. It is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that the remembrance of the living entity is due to the presence of the Supersoul within the heart. After changing the body, a living creature forgets everything of his past life. But because Narayan, the Supersoul, is present within his heart, he is reminded by him to act according to his past desire. Lord Brahma wanted to prove that Krishna is the original Narayan, that he is the source of Narayan, and that Narayan is not an exhibition of the external energy Maya, but is an expansion of spiritual energy. The activities of the external energy, or Maya, are exhibited after the creation of this cosmic world, and the original spiritual energy of Narayan was acting before the creation. So the expansions of Narayan from Krishna to Karanadakshayi Vishnu, from Karanadakshayi Vishnu to Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, from Garbhadakshayi Vishnu to Kshiradakshayi Vishnu, and from Kshiradakshayi Vishnu to everyone's heart are manifestations of his spiritual energy. They are not conducted by the material energy. Therefore, they are not temporary. Anything conducted by the material energy is temporary, but everything executed by the spiritual energy is eternal. Lord Brahma reconfirmed his statement, establishing Krishna as the original Narayan. He said that the gigantic universal body is still resting on the water known as Garbhadak. He spoke as follows. The gigantic body of the universe is another manifestation of your energy. On account of his resting on the water, this universal form is also Narayan. And we are all within the womb of this Narayan form. I see your different Narayan forms everywhere. I can see you on the water. I can feel you within my heart. And I can also see you before me now. You are the original Narayan. My dear Lord, in this incarnation, you have proved that you are the supreme controller of Maya. You remain within the cosmic manifestation, and yet the whole creation is within you. This fact has already been proved by you when you exhibited the whole universal creation within your mouth before your mother Yashoda. By your inconceivable potency of yoga maya, you can make such things effective without external help. My dear Lord Krishna, the whole cosmic manifestation that we are visualizing at present is all within your body. Yet I am seeing you outside, and you are also seeing me outside. How can such things happen without being influenced by your inconceivable energy? Lord Brahma stressed herein that without accepting the inconceivable energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot explain things as they are. He continued, "My dear Lord, leaving aside all other things, and just considering today's happenings, what I have seen, are they not all due to your inconceivable energies? First of all, I saw you alone. Thereafter, you expanded yourself as your friends, the calves, and all the existence of Vrindavan. Then I saw you and all the boys as four-handed Vishnus, and they were being worshipped by all elements and all demigods, including myself. Again, they all became cowherd boys, and you remained alone as you were before. Does this not mean that you are the Supreme Lord Narayan, the origin of everything, and from you everything emanates, and again everything enters into you, and you remain the same as before?" Persons who are unaware of your inconceivable energy cannot understand that you alone expand yourself as the creator Brahma, maintainer Vishnu, and annihilator Shiva. Persons who are not in awareness of things as they are contemplate that I, Brahma, am the creator. Vishnu is the maintainer, and Lord Shiva is the annihilator. Actually, you alone are everything, creator, maintainer, and annihilator. Similarly, you expand yourself in different incarnations. Among the demigods, you incarnate as Vamanadeva. Among the great sages, you incarnate as Parasuram. Among the human beings, you appear as yourself, as Lord Krishna or Lord Ram. Among the animals, you appear as the boar incarnation. And among the aquatics, you appear as the incarnation of fish. And yet, you have no appearance. You are always eternal. Your appearance and disappearance are made possible by your inconceivable energy, just to give protection to the faithful devotees and to annihilate the demons. O my Lord, O all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead, O Super Soul, controller of all mystic powers, no one can appreciate your transcendental pastimes as they are exhibited within these three worlds. No one can estimate how you have expanded your yoga maya and your incarnation, and how you act by your transcendental energy. My dear Lord, this whole cosmic manifestation is just like a flashing dream, and its temporary existence simply disturbs the mind. As a result, we are full of anxiety in this existence. To live within this material world means simply to suffer and to be full of all miseries. And yet, this temporary existence of the material world appears to be pleasing and dear, on account of its having evolved from your body, which is eternal and full of bliss and knowledge. My conclusion is, therefore, that you are the Supreme Soul, absolute truth, and the Supreme Original Person. And although you have expanded yourself in so many Vishnu forms, or in living entities and energies, by your inconceivable transcendental potencies, You are the supreme one without a second. You are the supreme super soul. The innumerable living entities are simply like sparks of the original fire. Your lordship, the conception of the super soul as impersonal is wrongly accepted because I see that you are the original person. A person with a poor fund of knowledge may think that because you are the son of Maharaj Nanda, you are not the original person, that you are born just like a human being. They are mistaken. You are the actual original person. That is my conclusion. In spite of your being the son of Nanda, you are the original person, and there is no doubt about it. You are the absolute truth, and you are not of this material darkness. You are the source of the original Brahma Jyoti, as well as the material luminaries. Your transcendental effulgence is identical with Brahma Jyoti. As it is described in the Brahma Samhita, the Brahma Jyoti is nothing but your personal bodily effulgence. There are many Vishnu incarnations and incarnations of your different qualities, but all those incarnations are not on the same level. You are the original lamp. Other incarnations may possess the same candle power as the original lamp, but the original lamp is the beginning of all light. And because you are not one of the creations of this material world, even after the annihilation of this world, your existence as you are will continue. Because you are the original person, you are therefore described in the Gopal Tapani, Vedic Upanishad, as well as in the Brahma Samhita as Govindam Adi Purusham. Govinda is the original person, the cause of all causes. In the Bhagavad Gita also it is stated that you are the source of the Brahman effulgence. No one should conclude that your body is like an ordinary material body. Your body is Akshara, indestructible. The material body is always full of the threefold miseries, but your body is Satchit Ananda Vigraha, full of bliss, knowledge, and eternality. You are also Niranjana, because your pastimes as the little son of Mother Yashoda or the Lord of the Gopis are never contaminated by the material qualities. And although you exhibited yourself in so many cowherd boys, calves, and cows, your transcendental potency is not reduced. You are always complete. As it is described in the Vedic literature, even if the complete is taken away from the complete, supreme absolute truth, it yet remains the complete, supreme absolute truth. And although many expansions from the complete are visible, the complete is one without a second. Since all your pastimes are spiritual, there is no possibility of their being contaminated by the material modes of nature. When you place yourself as subordinate to your father and mother, Nanda and Yashoda, you are not reduced in your potency. This is an expansion of your loving attitude for your devotees. There is no second identity to compete with you. A person with a poor fund of knowledge concludes that your pastimes and appearance are simply material designations. You are transcendental to both nations and knowledge, as it is confirmed in the Gopal Tapani. You are the original Amrita, nectar of immortality, indestructible. As confirmed in the Vedas, Amritam Shashvatam Brahma. Brahman is the eternal, the supreme origin of everything, who has no birth or death. In the Upanishads, it is stated that the supreme Brahman is as effulgent as the sun and is the origin of everything. And anyone who can understand that original person becomes liberated from the material, conditional life. Anyone who can simply be attached to you by devotional service can know your actual position, your birth, appearance, disappearance, and activities. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, simply by understanding your constitutional position, appearance, and disappearance, one can be immediately elevated to the spiritual kingdom after quitting this present body. Therefore, to cross over the ocean of material nescience, an intelligent person takes shelter of your lotus feet and is easily transferred to the spiritual world. There are many so-called meditators who do not know that you are the Supreme Soul. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, you are the Supreme Soul present in everyone's heart. Therefore, there is no necessity of one's meditating on something beyond you. One who is always absorbed in meditation on your original form of Krishna easily crosses over the ocean of material nescience. But persons who do not know that you are the Supreme Soul remain within this material world in spite of their so-called meditation. If, by the association of your devotees, a person comes to the knowledge that Lord Krishna is the original Super Soul, then it is possible for him to cross over the ocean of material ignorance. For instance, a person becomes transcendental to the mistake of thinking a rope is a snake. As soon as one understands that the rope is not a snake, he is liberated from fear. If one understands you, therefore, through your personal teachings, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, or through your pure devotees, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam and all Vedic literatures, if one realizes that you are the ultimate goal of understanding, he need no more fear this material existence. So-called liberation and bondage have no meaning for a person who is already engaged in your devotional service, just as a rope is not fearful to a person who knows that the rope is not a snake. A devotee knows that this material world belongs to you, and he therefore engages everything in your transcendental loving service. Thus there is no bondage for him. For a person who is already situated in the sun planet, there is no question of the appearance or disappearance of the sun in the name of day or night. It is also said that you, Krishna, are just like the sun, and Maya is like darkness. When the sun is present, there is no question of darkness. So for those who are always in your presence, there is no question of bondage or liberation. They are already liberated. On the other hand, persons who falsely think themselves to be liberated without taking shelter of your lotus feet fall down because their intelligence is not pure. If one therefore thinks that the Super Soul is something different from your personality and thus searches out the Super Soul somewhere else, in the forest or in the caves of the Himalayas, his condition is very lamentable. Your teachings in the Bhagavad Gita are that one should give up all other processes of self-realization and simply surrender unto you, for that is complete. Because you are supreme in everything, those who are searching after the Brahman effulgence are also searching after you. And those who are searching after Super Soul realization are also searching after you. You have stated in the Bhagavad Gita that you yourself, by your partial representation as the Super Soul, have entered into this material cosmic manifestation. You are present in everyone's heart, and there is no need to search out the Super Soul anywhere else. If someone does so, he is simply in ignorance. One who is transcendental to such a position understands that you are unlimited. You are both within and without. Your presence is everywhere. Instead of searching for the Supersoul anywhere else, a devotee only concentrates his mind on you within. Actually, one who is liberated from the material concept of life can search for you. Others cannot. The simile of thinking the rope to be a snake is applicable only to those who are still in ignorance of you. Actually, the existence of a snake besides the rope is only within the mind. The existence of Maya, similarly, is only within the mind. Maya is nothing but ignorance of your personality. When one forgets your personality, that is the conditional state of Maya. Therefore, one who is fixed upon you, both internally and externally, is not illusioned. One who has attained a little devotional service can understand your glories. Even one striving for Brahman realization or Paramatma realization cannot understand the different features of your personality unless he treads the devotional path. One may be the spiritual master of many impersonalists, or he may go to the forest or to a cave or mountain and meditate as a hermit for many, many years. But he cannot understand your glories without being favored by a slight degree of devotional service. Brahman realization or Paramatma realization are also not possible, even after one searches for many, many years, unless one is touched by the wonderful effect of devotional service. My dear Lord, I pray that I may be so fortunate that in this life or in another life, wherever I may take my birth, I may be counted as one of your devotees. Wherever I may be, I pray that I may be engaged in your devotional service. I do not even care what form of life I get in the future, because I can see that even in the form of cows and calves or cowherd boys, the devotees are so fortunate to be always engaged in your transcendental loving service and association. Therefore, I wish to be one of them instead of such an exalted person as I am now, for I am full of ignorance. The gopis and cows of Vrindavan are so fortunate that they have been able to supply their breast milk to you. Persons who are engaged in performing great sacrifices and offering many valuable goats in sacrifice cannot attain the perfection of understanding you, but simply by devotional service, these innocent village women and cows are all able to satisfy you with their milk. You have drunk their milk to satisfaction, yet you are never satisfied by those engaged in performing sacrifices. I am simply surprised, therefore, with the fortunate position of Maharaj Nanda, Mother Yashoda, and the cowherd men and gopis, because you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, are existing here as their most intimate, lovable object. My dear Lord, no one can actually appreciate the good fortune of these residents of Vrindavan. We are all demigods, controlling deities of the various senses of the living entities, and we are proud of enjoying such privileges. But actually, there is no comparison between our position and the position of these fortunate residents of Vrindavan, because they are actually relishing your presence and enjoying your association by dint of their activities. We may be proud of being controllers of the senses, but here, the residents of Vrindavan are so transcendental that they are not under our control. Actually, they are enjoying the senses through service to you. I shall therefore consider myself fortunate to be given a chance to take birth in this land of Vrindavan in any of my future lives. my dear Lord. I am therefore not interested in either material opulences or liberation. I am most humbly praying at your lotus feet for you to please give me any sort of birth within this Vrindavan forest, so that I may be able to be favored by the dust of the feet of some of the devotees of Vrindavan. Even if I am given the chance to grow just as the humble grass in this land, that will be a glorious birth for me. But if I am not so fortunate to take birth within the forest of Vrindavan, I beg to be allowed to take birth outside the immediate area of Vrindavan, so that when the devotees go out, they will walk over me. Even that would be a great fortune for me. I am just aspiring for a birth in which I will be smeared by the dust of the devotees' feet. I can see that everyone here is simply full of Krishna consciousness. They do not know anything but the lotus feet of Krishna, for which the Vedas themselves are searching. It is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that the purpose of Vedic knowledge is to find Krishna. And it is said in the Brahma Samhita that it is very difficult to find Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by systematic reading of the Vedic literature. But he is very easily available through the mercy of a pure devotee. The pure devotees of Vrindavan are fortunate because they can see Mukunda, Lord Krishna, all the time. This word Mukunda can be understood in two ways. Muk means liberation. Lord Krishna can give liberation and therefore transcendental bliss. The word also refers to his smiling face, which is just like the Kunda flower. Mukha also means face. The Kunda flower is very beautiful, and it appears to be smiling. Thus the comparison is made. The difference between the pure devotees of Vrindavan and other devotees is that the residents of Vrindavan have no other desire but to be associated with Krishna. Krishna, being very kind to his devotees, fulfills their desire. Because they always want Krishna's association, the Lord is always prepared to give it to them. The devotees of Vrindavan are also spontaneous lovers. They do not follow the regulative principles. They are not required to strictly follow regulative principles because they are already naturally developed in transcendental love for Krishna. Regulative principles are required for persons who have not achieved the position of transcendental love. Brahma is also a devotee of the Lord, but he is subject to follow the regulative principles. He prays to Krishna to give him the chance to take birth in Vrindavan so that he might be elevated to the platform of spontaneous love. Lord Brahma continued, "My Lord, sometimes I am puzzled as to how your lordship will be able to repay in gratitude the devotional service of these residents of Vrindavan. Although I know that you are the supreme source of all benediction, I am puzzled to know how you will be able to repay all the service that you are receiving from these residents of Vrindavan. I think of how you are so kind, so magnanimous, that even Putana, who came to cheat you by dressing herself as a very affectionate mother, was awarded liberation and the actual post of a mother. And other demons belonging to the same family, such as Agasura and Bakasura, were also favored with liberation. Under the circumstances, I am puzzled. These residents of Vrindavan have given you everything, their bodies, their minds, their love, their homes. Everything is being utilized for your purpose. So how will you be able to repay their debt? You have already given yourself to Putana. I surmise that you shall ever remain a debtor to the residents of Vrindavan, being unable to repay their loving service. My lord, I can understand that the super excellent service of the residents of Vrindavan is due to their spontaneously engaging all natural instincts in your service. It is said that attachment for material objects and home is due to illusion, which makes a living entity conditioned in the material world. But this is only the case for persons who are not in Krishna consciousness. In the case of the residents of Vrindavan, such obstructions as attachment to hearth and home are non-existent, because their attachment has been converted unto you, and their home has been converted unto a temple, because you are always there, and because they have forgotten everything for your sake. There is no impediment. For a Krishna conscious person, there is no such thing as impediments in hearth and home, nor is there illusion. I can also understand that your appearance as a small cowherd boy, a child of the cowherd men, is not at all a material activity. You are so much obliged by their affection that you are here to inspire them with more loving service by your transcendental presence. In Vrindavan, there is no distinction between material and spiritual, because everything is dedicated to your loving service. My dear lord, your Vrindavan pastimes are simply to inspire your devotees. If someone takes your Vrindavan pastimes to be material, he will be misled. My dear Lord Krishna, those who deride you, claiming that you have a material body like an ordinary man, are described in the Bhagavad Gita as demoniac and less intelligent. You are always transcendental. The non-devotees are cheated because they consider you to be a material creation. Actually, you have assumed this body, which resembles that of an ordinary cowherd boy, simply to increase the devotion and transcendental bliss of your devotees. My dear Lord, I have nothing to say about people who advertise that they have already realized God, or that by their realization they have themselves become God. But as far as I am concerned, I admit frankly that for me, it is not possible to realize you by my body, mind, or speech. What can I say about you, or how can I realize you by my senses? I cannot even think of you perfectly with my mind, which is the master of the senses. Your qualities, your activities, and your body cannot be conceived by any person within this material world. Only by your mercy can one understand to some extent what you are. My dear Lord, you are the Supreme Lord of all creation. Although I sometimes falsely think that I am the master of this universe, I may be the master of this universe, but there are innumerable universes, and there are innumerable Brahmas also, who preside over these universes. But actually, you are the master of them all. As the super soul in everyone's heart, you know everything. Please, therefore, accept me as your surrendered servant. I hope that you will excuse me for disturbing you in your pastimes with your friends and calves. Now, if you will kindly allow me, I will immediately leave so you can enjoy your friends and calves without my presence. My dear Lord Krishna, your very name suggests that you are all attractive. The attraction of the sun and the moon are all due to you. By the attraction of the sun, you are beautifying the very existence of the Yadu dynasty. With the attraction of the moon, you are enhancing the potency of the land, the demigods, the Brahmins, the cows, and the oceans. Because of your supreme attraction, demons like Kamsa and others are annihilated. Therefore, it is my deliberate conclusion that you are the only worshipable deity within the creation. Accept my humble obeisances until the annihilation of this material world. As long as there is sunshine within this material world, kindly accept my humble obeisances. In this way, Brahma, the master of this universe, after offering humble and respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and circumambulating him three times, was ready to return to his abode, known as Brahmaloka. By his gesture, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gave him permission to return. As soon as Brahma left, Lord Sri Krishna immediately appeared, as he had on the very day the cows and cowherd boys had vanished. Krishna had left his friends on the bank of the Yamuna while they were engaged in lunch, and although he returned exactly 1 year later, the cowherd boys thought that he had returned within a second. That is the way of Krishna's different energies and activities. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna himself is residing in everyone's heart, and he causes both remembrance and forgetfulness. All living entities are controlled by the supreme energy of the Lord, and sometimes they remember and sometimes they forget their constitutional position. His friends, being controlled in such a way, could not understand that for one whole year they were absent from the Yamuna bank and were under the spell of Brahma's illusion. When Krishna appeared before the boys, they thought, "Krishna has returned within a minute." They began to laugh, thinking that Krishna was not willing to leave their lunchtime company. They were very jubilant and invited him. "Dear friend Krishna, you have come back so quickly. All right, we have not as yet begun our lunch, not even taken one morsel of food. So please come and join us and let us eat together." Krishna smiled and accepted their invitation, and he began to enjoy the lunchtime company of his friends. While eating, Krishna was thinking, "These boys believe that I have come back within a second, but they do not know that for the last year I have been involved with the mystic activities of Lord Brahma." After finishing their lunch, Krishna and his friends and calves began to return to their Vrajabhumi homes. While passing, they enjoyed seeing the dead carcass of Agasura in the shape of a gigantic serpent. When Krishna returned home to Vrajabhumi, he was seen by all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. He was wearing a peacock feather in his helmet, which was also decorated with forest flowers. Krishna was also garlanded with flowers and painted with different colored minerals collected from the caves of Govardhan Hill. Govardhan Hill is always famous for supplying natural red dyes, and Krishna and his friends painted their bodies with them. Each of them had a bugle made of buffalo horn, and a stick and a flute, and each called his respective calves by their particular names. They were so proud of Krishna's wonderful activities that, while entering the village, they all sang his glories. All the gopis in Vrindavan saw beautiful Krishna entering the village. The boys composed nice songs, describing how they were saved from being swallowed by the great serpent, and how the serpent was killed. Some described Krishna as the son of Yashoda, and others as the son of Nanda Maharaj. "He is so wonderful that he saved us from the clutches of the great serpent and killed him," they said. But little did they know that 1 year had passed since the killing of Agasura. In this regard, Maharaj Parikshit asked Shukdeva Goswami, how the inhabitants of Vrindavan suddenly developed so much love for Krishna, although Krishna was not a member of any of their families. Maharaj Parikshit inquired, during the absence of the original cowherd boys, when Krishna expanded himself, why is it that the boys' parents became more loving towards him than toward their own sons? Also, why did the cows become so loving toward the calves more than toward their own calves? He told Maharaj Parikshit that every living entity is actually most attached to his own self. Outward paraphernalia, such as home, family, friends, country, society, wealth, opulence, and reputation, are all only secondary in pleasing the living entity. They please only because they bring pleasure to the self. For this reason, one is self-centered and is attached to his body and self more than he is to his relatives like wife, children, and friends. If there is some immediate danger to one's own person, he first of all takes care of himself, then others. That is natural. That means, more than anything else, he loves his own self. The next important object of affection after his own self is his material body. A person who has no information of the spirit soul is very much attached to his material body, so much so that even in old age he wants to preserve the body in so many artificial ways, thinking that his old and broken body can be saved. Everyone is working hard, day and night, just to give pleasure to his own self, under either the bodily or spiritual concept of life. We are attached to material possessions because they give pleasure to the senses or to the body. The attachment to the body is there only because the I, the spirit soul, is within the body. Similarly, when one is further advanced, he knows that the spirit soul is pleasing because it is part and parcel of Krishna. Ultimately, it is Krishna who is pleasing and all attractive. He is the super soul of everything. And in order to give us this information, Krishna descends and tells us that the all-attractive center is He Himself. Without being an expansion of Krishna, nothing can be attractive. Whatever is attractive within the cosmic manifestation is due to Krishna. Krishna is therefore the reservoir of all pleasure. The active principle of everything is Krishna. And highly elevated transcendentalists see everything in connection with Him. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is stated that a Mahabhagavat, or a highly advanced devotee, sees Krishna as the active principle in all movable and immovable living entities. Therefore, he sees everything within this cosmic manifestation in relation to Krishna. For the fortunate person who has taken shelter of Krishna as everything, liberation is already there. He is no longer in the material world. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Whoever is engaged in the devotional service of Krishna is already on the Brahma Bhuta, or spiritual platform. The very name Krishna suggests piety and liberation. Anyone who takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna enters the boat for crossing over the ocean of nescience. For him, this vast expansion of the material manifestation becomes as insignificant as a hoof print. Krishna is the center of all great souls, and he is the shelter of the material worlds. For one who is on the platform of Krishna consciousness, Vaikuntha, or the spiritual world, is not far away. He does not live within the material world, where there is danger at every step. In this way, Krishna consciousness was fully explained by Shukdeva Goswami to Maharaj Pariksit. Shukdeva Goswami even recited to the king the statements and prayers of Lord Brahma. These descriptions of Lord Krishna's pastimes with his cowherd boys, his eating with them on the bank of the Yamuna, and Lord Brahma's prayers unto him are all transcendental subject matters. These descriptions of Lord Krishna's pastimes with his cowherd boys, his eating with them on the bank of the Yamuna, and Lord Brahma's prayers unto him are all transcendental subject matters. Anyone who hears, recites, or chants them surely gets all his spiritual desires fulfilled. Thus Krishna's childhood appearance, his sporting with Balaram in Vrindavan, was described. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 14th chapter of Krishna, prayers offered by Lord Brahma to Lord Krishna.